When you listen to your ambition, you can accomplish amazing things. Whether you're looking to start your career or get ahead in your career, your journey begins at Seneca Polytechnic's Open House on Saturday, April 20th. Join us in person or virtually from 9 a.m. to noon to discover programs, meet Seneca experts, attend live presentations, and explore our campuses. You've got the ambition. Now take the first step. Register at SenecaPolytechnic.ca.
Necessarily the worst thing for Montreal. They played a good first period, but after that, Vegas really seemed to find their game, and they go on to a victory. So big game two coming up tomorrow night, 9 o'clock. Again, will be the face-off time before the series reverts to Montreal for games three and four coming up on Friday and Sunday.
Yeah, I'm all over that Seattle job right now, JR, like a dog on a bone. Well, I want the scoop.
You're taking it?
I'm trying to find out who is.
Oh, okay.
They already told me I'm not running. Actually, they never returned my call. So,
oh, okay. Rod Brindamore, is he the Rod the Bud?
I was circling back. I'm trying to connect. I'm thinking my buddy Dean Chenoweth, of course, Ed Chenoweth's son, coach in Seattle for years. He was given permission by Carolina to look around. I'm thinking, God, would Dino the dog take the job? And then I'm thinking, man, Rod Brindamore still not signed. Now, I don't know if they have the aviation tracker like they had on Babs when he came to Toronto. Mm. But I'm thinking anybody out there, if they're listening to Seattle right now, if you see Rod the Bod at the local gym or anywhere else, please let me know. But I'm my spidey senses, and you've said this, he ain't under contract. They're tingling right now.
It's the strangest thing about how this deal was supposedly done a month ago, and yet here we are. Their season, Carolina's season, has come to an end. And he still hasn't officially signed the contract.
And again, I don't care that he's from BC, but his father obviously has some health issues. But I also got to think that would not be hard for that Seattle group to roll out a 5x5 like Barry Trotz got. And if you're getting offered 1.8x3, by my calculation, JR, that is a...
you can make slightly less in one year
exactly.
than you could over 3
well,
years.
Yeah. And my good friend Barry Trotz on that Islander deal would have made more in that entire contract than he did in 20 years in Nashville and Washington. And so, something to watch here. It's going to happen soon.
All right. Pierre McGuire joined us earlier this morning and said the inkling is the Seattle job is going to be announced here shortly. Okay, with that, let us get to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline and welcome to the show Mike Kelly. He is a hockey analyst. You see him on the NHL Network. He works with Sport Logic with an emphasis on the analytics side of the world of sports. Mike has been a good guest with us in the past, joins us this morning. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, guys, I'm doing great. How are you?
Excellent. Thanks. Really appreciate it. You were hearing anything about the Seattle job? Can you give Simmer a hint or two?
No, I have no idea. That's the insider game is not my game, but it sounds like from what I've heard and what you guys have heard also that Rod Brindamore, who you're talking about, may not want to leave Carolina. It kind of almost sounds like he'll either coach there or just maybe not coach if it doesn't work out, but that's just what we're all hearing, so your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah. All right, good stuff. Let's get to let's start with last night's game out in Vegas, and I know you tweeted out after period one that that Montreal dominated the slot shots and lots of good stuff happening for Montreal, and yet they exit with a 1-0 deficit. You said you'd take that period if you're Montreal 10 times out of 10. What was your thought on how the rest of the game played out?
A little different from the first period. So, look, the one thing that I noticed about the second periods in the playoffs for sure is that the more skilled teams, the quicker teams really get a leg up with that long change. And being at home, obviously, Vegas as well, that second period, they just completely flipped a switch and dominated it. After Montreal, like you point out, had a really good first period. I know they came out of it down 1-0, but what I thought going into this series was that the template for success for Montreal would be similar to Minnesota in the first round that they played against Vegas. And they took Vegas 7 games in that series, played them really tight. But what Minnesota was able to do was win the battle around the front of the net, get rebound chances, outshoot the opposition from those quality areas right in front of the net. And Montreal can play that game, similar to Minnesota. And that's exactly what they did in the first period. They had some good looks around Marc-Andre Fleury, a couple of good rebound opportunities. They're a shot volume team. They like to kind of shoot it from everywhere, get rebounds on angles, try to score that way. Did a good job of it. Like you said, the shot advantage from the slot was 6-0. From that inner slot high danger area, it was 6-0 from that inner slot high danger area, 6-1 from the slot overall. So good first period. But yeah, the second period, Vegas kind of took over. And Carey Price was great. We all saw kind of the 10 bell saves he was making going left to right, right to left, highlight reel style saves. There's only so much he can do, and obviously the dam breaks at some point. Both goalies were really good, though. Like, let's not forget, if you're a Habs fan, Montreal could have had one or two pretty early on Marc-Andre Fleury. It was a great, great start for them in that game, but got away from them after that.
Mike, is the obvious at a long change, and I'll say the favorite, Vegas, first game, but that second period, when you have the right matchups and off the faceoffs, there is a huge advantage for them?
Sure, yeah. I mean, we saw two faceoff goals in the game, right? And one of the things I was looking at coming into the game is that Montreal allows a shot on goal when they lose a draw on their own end almost 30% of the time in the playoffs, which is worst of any team in the postseason, 16th out of 16. And they lost a couple draws clean, and I think that's the thing that's the killer. If you're in the D zone, it's almost like a win is if you can push. A win is if you can tie up and create a scramble, get wingers involved, and just create a bit of a mess. They lost a couple draws clean. Obviously, Vegas had the matchups that they wanted for those offensive zone faceoffs. You know, it was a tough sequence on the first one for just outside of his own blue line, and it went back in, and then Ben Sherratt had to ice the puck, and then Gustafson got beaten in the net front. Another point shot goal that was tipped in by Matthias Janmark, a great spin move off the defender there. So just a couple of battles in front of the net, that one creating a screen, one creating a tip. But again, you lose those draws clean, and you know, Vegas doesn't need a lot of advantages to beat anybody in this league, but you give them last change in an offensive zone setting that they're going to be comfortable in. You're icing pucks, you're losing net battles. They're going to make you pay for it. That's what they did.
Talking to Mike Kelly, he is a hockey analyst for the NHL Network and Sport Logic, specializing in analytics. As you assess this series before it began, did you put special emphasis on the Vegas D in particular? Last night they had three of the four goals. Five of the six defensemen ended up with at least 1 point in the game. They really seemed to, the game plan seemed to be to get the defense involved. Did you see that through the numbers that you were studying?
I didn't see. Look, anytime defensemen contribute that much offensively in a game, it's an outlier. It doesn't matter how good your D is. It just, you don't get that kind of production game in and game out. But look, you see the decor that they have with Theodore Martinez, Petrangelo, obviously. They've got guys that like to jump into the play, into the rush. They're a stretch pass heavy team. So you're going to get, you know, stretch pass opportunities, rush opportunities that will lead to assists and points. They had a great set play, and Kevin Bieksa pointed it out on the broadcast, offensive zone faceoff went in the left circle where Petrangelo just jumps from the weak side right into the slot, and he kind of mishandled the puck. But we saw him do a lot of that in St. Louis and does it in Vegas as well. So they create opportunities for their defensemen to be involved offensively. And last night's a game where, you know, some pucks went in and some points pile up, and I'd be shocked if you get that kind of production again in the next game. But yeah, it doesn't mean that you don't have to watch for these guys to jump low in the offensive zone and jump into the rush and create a second wave of offense. Because, you know, most of their D are capable of doing it. And, you know, Montreal's really got one guy that does it well, and that's a guy that wasn't in the lineup, Jeff Petrie. Romanov, you know, kind of likes to jump up a little bit, but I don't really know if that's his game. And then they got some heavier guys that, you know, it's really just not what they do. So Vegas will certainly be the team that you'll see more D getting low and D getting into the rush of Montreal in the series for sure.
Mike, I think we also saw last night some great saves, but similar to the Toronto series, I thought the Leafs did a great job of getting Price moving laterally. They either didn't connect or he made the saves. Did you see that as part of the game plan for Vegas, especially on the Martinez goal?
Yeah, well, what a pump fake that was by Shea Theodore.
Like, he almost broke his arms and his legs.
Yeah, he almost broke my brain. I was watching it, and he kind of does that. I thought he stumbled. It looked kind of awkward, but he faked it so well. And then to be able to execute that pass kind of off balance, my goodness. That was great. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm watching it, and I'm watching Price, and I'm like, oh, my God, you might get this. You might get across and make the Superman save.
Yeah.
But, you know, it wasn't to be. But yeah, look, anytime you can get a goalie moving laterally in the net, it's going to work to your advantage. One of the funny kind of, you know, when I look at goalies in the playoffs and try to assess strengths and weaknesses, it's such a small sample, it's really tough to do. One of the funny things about Carey Price in these playoffs is when he's gone laterally from his glove side to his blocker side, so left to right in the net, his save percentage has been well over 900. It's been exceptional, best of any goalie. When he's gone, it's been somewhere in the 600, 630, I think, going into that game, lowest of any goalie. Now, we saw him make the highlight reel save going across on Mark Stone with the glove, and he made a couple going the other way, too. So yeah. I don't know if there's anything to read into that. It's just one of those kind of funny outliers. So I talked to a coach about this. I said, if you saw that going into a game against this goalie, would you do anything different? And, you know, this, I think, again, is a great lesson in understanding analytics and how to apply analytics. And you might think, yeah, you know, let's load up on the right side and try to get one-timers on the right side, get him going to that glove where he's been weak. But then you start messing with your own game and messing with your own players' heads. So his thought was, just try to spend more time in the O-zone, and those kind of plays will come organically. Because if you start trying to change what you're doing, that's where you can get into trouble. So anyways, look, yeah, get a goalie moving laterally if you can, but both of these guys in general are so good that, you know, you kind of need traffic, rebound, and chaos to beat them.
And funny, having played the position very poorly, Mike, back in the day for myself, I would but I would say as a goaltender, sincerely, what happens on your blocker side is that there's a tendency to be able to hold your arm a little bit better with your stick, but there's also a theory and a thought you don't even subconsciously, but if you watch it, the goaltender will actually move closer towards the shooter on his blocker side, where you have more of a tendency to dive towards the post with your glove. So that to me would be part of the rationale of why that might happen on goaltenders. Also, having you on, I read your piece on the Islander-Tampa series, so certainly some great thoughts there. Thoughts on the Islanders and why they were capable of winning in Game 1 and kind of going forward for the style they're playing.
So what do you guys think of the Islanders? Do you like watching them?
I don't mind it. I don't, you know, there's points of series where I've kind of said, okay, not, but I appreciate it because I love Barry Trotz. I love Pageau. I know that they're not flash and dash, but I also appreciate that tactically they play hard and they have everybody buy in. So I don't turn it off at this point, but they're not one of the sexier teams. But I, you know, it's also, as I said, I think people just get carried away with the teams that aren't exciting all the time.
Yeah, fair enough. And, you know, when they get out to a lead, they really know how to lock it down. And I think that kind of makes it less exciting. But of the remaining teams in the playoffs, they're the highest scoring team. Only Colorado's averaging more goals per game, and they're out, obviously. I honestly have said it before. I think the only thing boring about the Islanders is that other teams can't score on them. When it's 4-1 or 3-1, they're not making mistakes that send the game to overtime and give you a crazy game. They lock it down and they win. So what, you know, when I think about the Islanders, I love their attention to detail. I love the way they play. I think we're talking about hockey being the ultimate team sport, right? I think that's why a lot of people love it. It's you can't just LeBron a team and bring a guy in and go to the finals every year. The Islanders embody what it means to be a team more than anyone else in the NHL. They're the best example of the sum being greater than its parts. And I respect that, and I appreciate that. Everybody on that team has a job to do and a particular role. And they execute top to bottom better than anybody. And it's why they're successful. And so when I look at the Islanders I look at Barry Trotz, and I've looked heavily into this because I love the way that he coaches. And I love the way that they value puck management over puck possession. We hear puck possession all the time in the league now. And for me, it is nothing more than a means to an end. I don't care if you've got the puck all night long. Are you getting quality looks? Are you giving up fewer quality looks and ultimately scoring more and allowing less? There are teams that don't need to possess the puck a lot to do that. I'd rather be that team than the team that skates around the outside, and the Islanders will let you do that. So I love the way they manage the puck. I love the fact that they can dump pucks in, have a plan to go get the puck back. Which you have to be able to do in the playoffs. How many times do we see teams in the playoffs that overhandle the puck, Toronto Maple Leafs, and ultimately don't have a ton of success.
Yeah.
And they do it at the wrong times. You think about Mitch Marner in Game 7, that turnover at the offensive blue line, trying to beat three defensemen or three players on his own. Islanders don't do that. So I just appreciate the style of game they play. It is exactly what you need to do in the postseason. They're good enough to win in the regular season as well. I honestly think that, you know, a lot of people coming into the conference final were probably like, well, Tampa and Vegas, that'd be such a great final. I think the Islanders-Vegas final, that would be the final people think a Tampa-Vegas final would be. Oh. So, I'd love to see that one.
With Mike Kelly, hockey analyst for NHL Network, and with Sport Logic, I agree with you what you've said about the Islanders. And another thing is just watching the games in their barn in particular with the fans. It just makes it so – there's so much energy there. It's awesome. How come, Mike, more teams just don't play that way?
It's hard. Honestly, it's stopping and starting on pucks instead of, you know, doing a loop. It's putting a puck in a corner and having a plan to go get it back and dig it out. They got skill. Like, I don't want to talk about them like all they do is strap the work boots on and grind. They've got skill. But look, not every team's built the same, right? There are teams that it would be ill-advised to suggest that they should go out and play the way that the Islanders play. So you can't just blanket it across the league, I don't think. But at the same time, a lot of the reason why they're successful is that they don't make those mental mistakes as often as some other teams. It's not easy to do. It's not easy to play with that kind of focus every game in and game out. They're able to do it.
Good stuff. Mike, always appreciate your time and your insight. I know that you look at the numbers. What were your predictions for these two series, just out of interest?
Islanders, Vegas.
Okay, there we go.
I think Tampa's winning tonight, though. I think that's going to be a 7-gamer no matter what. So we'll see.
We'll see starting tonight. Okay, appreciate the time as always, and thanks. And we'll chat again down the road.
Okay, guys, take care.
All right, there's Mike Kelly, hockey analyst, specializing in analytics. You see him on the NHL Network and works for Sport Logic as well, which provides actually a lot of analytics data for NHL teams as well. And I've said this a million times about Mike. He kind of boilerplates it away and makes it indigestible. And I think uses the important chunks of analytics as opposed to just grabbing numbers for numbers' sake.
Yeah, and again, any of the conversations, JR, is respectful to have. Like, I'll go back here in Ottawa, and people would mention that Patrick Wierkosch was an analytics darling. And, you know, when you start to go down the path with certain players that you just know aren't very good, I'm not saying that that means you throw out the numbers, but further discussions to his point, team play, and then further to that, and this is incredible what the Islanders have done. What I try to explain, I use a term all the time, having a program. In a perfect world, you have a manager, coach, and scouting staff and players and everybody that are on the same page as to what is our philosophy. Lou Lamoriello ran that forever in New Jersey, that everybody that went in there bought into everything on and off the ice, right? You create a program. And that's why they're so successful, and it's so hard to do. And I also respect, and to Mike's point, isn't this what we heard about Ottawa back in the day? Trapping team, very boring, and they led the National Hockey League in scoring?
Yep.
Like this
That's how you win.
We had it in Washington forever. Terry Murray, it's the Caps. And they were like, well, we have the number one power play. We're leading the league in scoring. How could it be boring? But it's hard to break those molds in those series at times. So I just love Mike's stuff. And as you said, it brings it into, and I just start to think philosophically, man, wouldn't you love to have that guy in the war room with you when you're trying to help build a hockey team?
Again, you can follow Mike. Let me just find his Twitter here. Should let people do. Mike Kelly NHL. Mike Kelly NHL if you're on Twitter. Okay, 9:31. We'll take a break. And we'll have, by the way, game two tonight, Islanders-Tampa, that Mike says the Lightning are going to win, but it's a 7-game series, and he likes the Islanders overall. For you, 8 o'clock face-off here on TSN 1200. Okay, when we come back, if you got at least one code word into us yesterday, stand by. We could be calling you with the good news that you're this week's winner in our TSN 1200 Jersey Monday contest. So stand by for that and much more as we roll on here Tuesday morning on Sports Radio, TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
All right, welcome back. 9:38 here on this Tuesday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer. Thanks again to Mike Kelly for joining us. Talking about last night's game, a 4-1 Vegas win over Montreal. And a look ahead to tonight's game two with the Islanders up 1-0 on Tampa. I got text at 12-1200 is tonight's Canadian soccer game on TV. It is on pay TV.
Okay.
One Soccer. if you so choose. This, of course, is leg two of their, I don't know, semifinal and the right way to put it, for in CONCACAF qualifying. They won down in Haiti on Saturday 1-0. So a win or a tie in tonight's game for Canada, and they will be through to the final round of World Cup qualifying involving the best nations in North and Central American and the Caribbean. So big game tonight. Again, they'll have the advantage going in. They're not playing their home games in Canada because of the border issue. So they're, I believe tonight's game is being played at where they're headquartered, just outside of Chicago.
Yeah.
So.
I wonder if any Canadian nationals or any allowed crowd, Jaron. I think some people complain, and why is hockey getting them in? I think there was some ideas at the time, the simple fact that the Haitian group had to come in, would they be able to come into Canada? And this was planned way before, but some people now starting to look around as the NHL's been allowed and say, hey, why not us? So hopefully they can bring this home.
Chris, the announcement yesterday by Lisa McLeod, the Ontario Heritage and Sport Minister, kind of opening the door to the CFL, the OHL, a few other leagues as well to, you know, kind of get at least going in the right direction, get games going. But several leagues, including the CCHL, have kind of said, hey, what about us? They were not mentioned in the press release yesterday. I believe there were 18 Ontario-based teams involving, I think, six leagues, but nothing at the CCHL. I know on the girls' side of things, there's something called the PWHL, the Provincial Women's Hockey League, as well, that was not included. So we were endeavoring to get Lisa McLeod on the show this morning. Unfortunately, she was unavailable because I did want to kind of follow up on that angle because we've received a number of communications from people going, hey, what about the rest of us? We're kind of left out at this point.
Yeah, and I hope that it's just more JR kind of getting that first leg off the ground planning, and it doesn't make any sense. And as you said, from the Central Junior Hockey League, the commissioner, Mr. Abrams, you know, certainly very active on social media, and hopefully all these things will start to, because everybody is, as you said, they're making plans, and as you get to that level, it becomes a business, and you're trying to now make sure that players know they're going to have a league to play in. May not sound like a whole lot in June, but players do have options, so very important they find out pretty quickly.
And of course, that I think the big thing is, by and large, the leagues and teams we talked about yesterday are teams and leagues that have fans, right?
Yeah,
and that's going to be a huge part of it. And not
that
the CCHL doesn't have fans, but it's a smaller component of things, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It is a pay to play league, so part of what owners in the league, you know, do is they are able to pay their expenses through the players actually paying to be on the team. So fans are still important. Don't get me wrong, but it's not as big a part of it as it is with these other leagues.
Yeah, it'd be real interesting, Jer, behind the scenes for each of the CFL teams or even the Ontario Hockey League, when you've had a full season. Imagine where the 67s were at. First of all, lost millions in what would have been a couple of playoff runs, but you know what? That's a season ticket base that's very small. Now you're starting from scratch. And from a time in the CFL, like, where the heck are you at? Like, are you at, like, an expansion team? And for the nine teams in the league, like, it's a lot of work now to all of a sudden say, okay, now all of a sudden we're kicking off in less than 2 months here. We got to all of a sudden start selling inventory for seven games. Like, it's a lot of work to do that.
Yeah, Mark Gowdy, president and CEO of OSEG, was on the drive yesterday, and actually he answered that question as where the business is right now. I got to find the quote because I listened to the interview. But whatever amount of fans we can have this year is a positive. I fully expect it will get better as the season goes on. And then he said, quote, our season ticket base is phenomenal. Across the CFL, season ticket holders have hung in there and didn't ask for their money back. So I took that to say that perhaps here in Ottawa and elsewhere across the league, they were maybe pleasantly surprised that people who had put down season ticket deposits in 2019 or 2020, sorry, before everything shut down, said, you know what? Keep my money.
Yeah.
When and if you guys get back to work, then I'm ready to come back and the games. That's certainly what was intimated yesterday in the conversation.
Yeah, and you know, inventory there, Gerald, just say, hey, 25,000 times seven. You look at that and you're trying to sell 175,000 seats. And if, say, you know, even at the highest 10,000 or season tickets, you know, you're talking about 15,000 a night of trying to move and people making decisions. And I think people would be surprised. And even at the NHL level here in Ottawa, like, you got 41 games to sell. And when you don't have a high season ticket base, it's just a lot to move. When you get into group sales, individuals, planning, and like I say, it generally takes months and months to put this in place.
All right, so we'll keep our eye on that developing situation. That is going to be something that evolves over the summer. Not only, you know, again, CFL schedule is going to come out today. That's the biggest one we're concentrating on, but it does bleed down into lower levels and goes essentially, at the end of the day, right down to kids' sports. where there are no fans other than very supportive parents. But we'll eventually see what doors open as far as kids' sports go. Right now we're at stage one, right, which allows for small practices up to, is it 8 or 10 players?
You have 8? Up to 10.
Up to 10.
And that does not include the coach.
Yeah, okay. And then stage two will...
That's 25.
Yep.
And there's some thoughts that that includes exhibition games. I'm not positive on that. I know some local baseball teams have already put together a schedule for July and hoping that they're going to be able to play. But I don't know if the province has said that's good to go and you can travel and start playing games.
And then stage three is scheduled right now, I believe, for July 21st or 23rd, if everything continues to move in a positive direction. And the feel is that that may mean, just in terms of kids' activities, et cetera, that maybe by August things could return to so-called normal at that point, which would be absolutely phenomenal. You know, for the summer sports, it's an August start is not great, but at least
no.
It gives you a couple of months to get some games in and some practices and get kind of fully back to normal. And for the fall sports, you can kind of begin fresh starting in late August and September.
Yeah. Well, and for years and years, JR, and I guess some thankful that we have the video games and all the boys at home do it a fair amount, but I gotta say we have pushed and tried for a long time, and I know I sound old school on we'd go outside play all day. As a society, we're not in a very good spot physically, right? And for a lot of people mentally it's tied. I know for me it is. And I just think for a lot of people, man, you're starting from scratch. And the more people we can get out and get signed up for stuff and get active, I think it's really important for the city, the country, for the world. I mean, a lot of people that have hunkered down at home here for the last 18 months, they probably aren't feeling very good about themselves.
Okay, 9:46. It is time to call our weekly winner in our TSN 1200 Sens Jersey Monday contest. All of you that put in at least one code word and maybe all six yesterday, went into the big old, well, I won't call it a drum, quite frankly. We just randomly picked one of the entries that came in at 12-1200, and it is time to call this week's winner.
Hello.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
Hey. Good, you?
Good, thanks. You know who this is?
I think so.
Who is it?
Somebody from 1200.
Should we keep talking in low tones?
Certainly.
Yes. Kevin, JR and Simmer from TSN 1200. How you doing?
I'm great now.
You're our grand prize winner this week in our Jersey Monday contest. Congratulations.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Yeah, you're welcome. How many times did you had 6 code words yesterday? How many did you put in at the end of the day?
One.
One, wow. I mean, how many times that has happened where I would think that people, you know, obviously the chances are greater the more you put in, but one is all you needed, and one is what got you the grand prize, so congratulations.
Kev, what are you thinking as far as a name and number?
Thinking Borrell.
Wow.
Oh,
he doesn't even play for the team anymore. That's
but I always liked him, good guy.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Up.
And probably not a chance that somebody else will be showing up in number 74 anytime soon. Fairly rare number as well.
Yeah, true.
So you may be there, though. Okay, the Borrell Cup. Well, very popular guy when he played here, for sure. So a good choice, and it'll cost us a little bit extra in the lettering, I guess, eh? So that's a bit of a... Listen, I'm sure we'll have to look at the budget, Kevin, make sure we can do that. listen, congratulations. Our latest winner in our Sens Jersey Monday contest. Way to go.
No, that's great. Thanks, guys.
All right, you're welcome. Kevin Nickel is our winner this week. So B-O-R-O-W-I-E-C-K-I. Borowicki.
Well
with a,
done.
And there's an extra E or an I in there somewhere, right?
Oh, is there?
I believe so.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, good old shout-out to Borrell. Almost out of sight, out of mind, going down to Nashville for this year.
He's back in town. I'm guessing he is.
Oh, he's probably finishing off that basement project that he'd been working on for years, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, congratulations to Kevin. We'll do it again next Monday, our TSN 1200 Jersey Monday contest. We'll take a break, come back with a final segment before we turn things over to Steve Lloyd and Graham Creech for In the Box, coming up after 10 alongside Kenny Walls. This afternoon, Lee and AJ are on at 2 until 3. Then we got our match of the day from Euro 2020, France-Germany. One of the big round-robin games is coming up this afternoon. We'll have it for you at 3 o'clock until 5. Then the boys will come back, take you from 5 to 6. And then at 8 o'clock tonight, down to Tampa, we go for Game 2 of the Islanders and the Lightning. That's all straight ahead right here on TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
All right, welcome back. 9:53. It was on this day in 1992 that Rick Bowness was announced as the first head coach of the Ottawa Senators. Of course, he would last into the 1994-95 season, so about two and a half years or thereabouts. Be replaced very quickly by Davey Allison. Yeah. Only lasted, I think, 24 games, yeah. I want to say. Yeah. And then Jacques Martin, of course, carried on for the better part of a decade. And then since then, it's been kind of a mishmash, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
Some good, some bad. But yeah, on this day, Rick Bowness announces the first head coach of the Sens, and of course, still around today, coaching the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, and a real good guy. Everybody loves him. And think back to, first of all, very solidly, JR has kept kind of, would you say that a hybrid mullet? You know, a little bit.
No, he's got, all I can say is that it's a great hair game. How old would he be now? Like, he'd be into his 60s,
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. And also what's evolved, thankfully, from the 90s are the track suits that the coaches had to wear back in the day. Mm-hmm. Those starter track suits, although I thought super cool at the time, did not age very well. Looked like you're kind of doing
something. I think starter's making a comeback.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, everything old is new again.
Kind of a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air kind of look there. That was also the time when Reebok was king. You were cool and can't find that anywhere. And if I'm buying anything garment-wise, I hope we don't have a sponsor with anybody else, but Under Armour is the way to go for me.
There you go. On this day in 2008, mentioned this earlier this morning, was the day that Tiger sunk that putt on 18 to send the U.S. Open to a 18-hole playoff the next day. Do you remember kind of the, I don't call him an old-timer, but the veteran player? He was up. It was going to be such a great story that he was going to win his first major.
Veteran.
Italian name?
Rocco Mediate or something?
Nice. Got the first name right.
Rocco Mediate?
Rocco Mediate. Well done. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Is he the cool guy with the ponytail?
No, that's Miguel Angel.
That's what I'm visualizing, thinking that guy's the coolest guy on the planet.
No, Rocco is just, he looks like your genuine salt of the earth Italian guy.
Okay.
Anyway, Tiger, and I still remember the call. I think it was Dan Hicks. Yeah. Expect anything else? When Tiger, and he just caught the corner of the cup and it rolled in. To send it to the 18-hole playoff. And that would be the last major that Tiger would win until he won the Masters in 2019.
How did the 18 go, Jer? Like the playoff?
Tiger won. I think it was actually fairly close, but I think by the end.
I think that's the stinkiest of the playoffs.
I think they've changed it now.
Have they?
I think they've gone with maybe a four-hole aggregate score.
I wanted over that evening. This rolling back the two of you the next day. And was there a big crowd that showed up? Do you remember?
I think it was decent.
Because it's Tiger, right? The odd time you get the two guys, people are like, am I going to keep my hotel for another day? No, going to head home.
2011, Bruins beat the Canucks in Game 7. Of course, Vancouver fans reacted as they do by rioting. So it makes them very unpopular. Yeah. 2015, Hawks beat the Lightning 2-0 to clinch the Cup in Game 6. That would be Chicago's third championship in six seasons.
Yeah, and also one of those Cups, say, were down 3-1, and I know the rivalry between Babs and Coach Q, they were able to roll back. And it's pretty neat when you see from Chicago early on, JR, some salary caps, some mistakes made financially and contractually, but boy, they sure turned out an awful lot of players. If you go through, and I know it was the main core, but they had to hustle there a number of years to completely switch out the roster, including that mega trade they made with Atlanta after the first one when they sent the old Bufflin?
I thought it was Winnipeg. Didn't Bufflin and Andrew Ladd go to Winnipeg, or did they go to Atlanta? Or I guess it was Atlanta who ended up in Winnipeg.
Yeah, I thought they started in Atlanta.
Yes. That would be their last year, I think, in Atlanta. That was the big one. Yeah. And Bufflin was so good in that first Stanley Cup. Oh, my God. It looked like...
Joel used him everywhere, right?
Yeah. He was on the front
in the power play.
Yeah. He was a massive, massive man.
Yeah.
Would you consider the Chicago Blackhawks winning three times in 6 years or the Pittsburgh Penguins winning back-to-back as the greater achievement in the last 10 years?
Holy jumping jeepers. I'll say back-to-back, and I'll put both close, but I was actually talking to a former player just about the fact of, for Tampa Bay, when you have 1-1 cup, we think they're all like win, win, win. I do think it takes somebody like Sidney Crosby, JR, because I do think it's easy for a player to say, we already won last year, and we may look at it and say, oh, you got this small window. Well, I've already won it. Nobody's going to criticize me. So I think the back-to-back to come, just to understand and how hard the haul is, so I'll give that, but certainly a great achievement from both in the salary cap era.
Birthdays today, Mike Holmgren, the longtime NFL coach with the Packers and then with the Seahawks, turns, let's see, you're born in 48, so 73 years old today from Mike Holmgren.
Yeah.
Always had the great stash game going.
Yeah.
Wade Boggs, born on this day. He is, I believe, 63, of course. Played for the Red Sox and the Yankees.
Yeah.
One of the rare guys that was kind of top of his game for both of those rivals. And, of course, was the batting champion for, I think, 3 or 4 consecutive years.
Oh, and such a good fella. I remember being at the Red Sox game, and the chant was, don't trade Wade for getting laid. And that and don't trade Boggs for doing, and I'm not going to say it on the air.
No, please don't.
And that was Margo Adams. What was gearless, kind of a Fatal Attraction type style at the games, right?
Okay.
That was a big story, right?
Margo Adams? Adams, okay.
Isn't that who it was?
Yeah, I think so. You said Margo.
She'd come to the games and somehow be strategically placed where he'd get a bit of a show while he was playing.
There you go.
And also, I think a legendary beer drinker, close to Rod Langway, from what I understand.
Wade Boggs.
Yeah.
Last but not least, Dean McCammond turns 48 years old today, the old Ottawa Senator, who probably still rubs his jaw from time to time thanks to that Chris Pronger elbow in the Stanley Cup final.
Would you agree that old Dino in the new era would have been one hell of a player?
Oh, my God, he was so fast.
Oh, Jesus, did he have the wheels, eh?
Yeah.
Former Flame, right?
He played for a lot of teams. Yeah, Well-traveled was Dean McCammond. Yeah. If you're celebrating your birthday today on this 15th day of June, happy birthday to you.